If any of you are interested in the resources, the information of the newspapers that carried these articles and the dates, you can write to me, send a self-addressed stamped envelope and 25 cents worth of printing, and I'll enclose the bibliography for those of you that don't take the tapes every week by subscription so that you can find out what is in these articles. There isn't even time in 1 hour to go into the details, and I bring them up because this story is just going to keep developing. It covers a whole era, and I can't say it enough. I have to repeat it because, as I told you, these names maybe, if it opens up, will become household words. It depends how the investigations go and who sits on the investigations. I mentioned several weeks ago, October the 11th, when Sadat was first murdered, how a company, the Santa Fe International, that did the most building for Egypt, was sold to Kuwait just the day before Sadat was murdered, and how Gerald Ford was on the board of directors of the Santa Fe, and also a gentleman from the Security Exchange Commission, a former chairman of the Security Exchange Commission, was on the board with Gerald Ford. His name is Roderick Hills. I also mentioned that there was an investigation to probe the selling of this company because of the manipulation of the funds so quickly within a few days' time. What happened was that the stock was selling, according to the San Francisco Examiner, at $19 a share, and within a few days, on October the 5th, the day before Sadat was murdered, the stock went up from, if you had 10 options in this, for $62.50. A few days later, within 1 week, it was worth $14,250. It went up 22,700% in less than 1 week. And the bankers have been told to freeze this money because somebody had inside information that evidently Sadat was going to be murdered. And the point is that these builders, by selling to Kuwait, and the United States Army moving in the day that Sadat was killed, it was an excuse for Haig and the Defense Department to throw in a bunch of troops and millions of dollars into the area. And this is the largest builder, their American supplier in Egypt, and therefore they would have the contract, just as Brown and Root did in Southeast Asia, the Texas firm linked to Lyndon Johnson, when that war escalated. The Los Angeles Times has an article this week: the United States seeks to freeze $5 million gained from the Santa Fe trading. This is from the LA Times. A federal judge, acting at the request of Security Exchange Commission, Monday ordered 9 banks and brokerage houses to temporarily freeze $5 million in illegal profits that they allege were fraudulently obtained by investors and inside information preceding the announcement of the Alhambra-based Santa Fe International that would be acquired by Kuwait. Now, I mentioned on this program, and you might have read the newspaper, the CIA knew 3 weeks before the killing that Sadat was going to be killed. They knew it 1 day before. Gerald Ford has been a member of the CIA and the Defense Department and Navy Intelligence since his congressional days, and on the Warren Commission, and he's on the board of directors of this firm. So if he owned a certain amount of shares, like, say, $62.50, and I'm sure he has more than that in it, he's a director, it went up to $14,000 in a few days. And also the Security Exchange people would be familiar that something was going to happen in Egypt. And so that there's been a big freeze on this money because of the sudden change of the way it transacted. And some people lost and some people made a lot of money. They have asked to hold the money at Credit Suisse of Zurich, the Swiss American Securities in New York, the Citibank in New York, the Morgan Trust, Chase Manhattan, the Drexel Burnham Lambert Group, and so forth. The Security Exchange Commission said that unnamed investors violated the anti-fraud provisions of the federal security law by buying common stocks and options while in the possession of material non-public information that made their investments so rich. The security exchange said that certain of the proceeds have been and may be in the process of being transferred to foreign banks right now that would threaten the immediate and irreparable harm to public interest. They're trying to stop the illegal gains of this transaction. What makes that so interesting is that old Gerald Ford is on the board of directors of this Santa Fe. It reminds me of his work on the Warren Commission and the description in that book, Were We Controlled? And some of you may not have that book. It's by Lincoln Lawrence on the Kennedy assassination. And the allegation here was that certain people had foreknowledge that John Kennedy was going to be murdered, and they synchronized that information with an investment that made them a profit of $500 million on the assassination. It involved the Allied Crude Vegetable Oil Refining Company headed by Anthony Tino De Angelis in New Jersey. And the stocks were manipulated so that they made criminal profits. They synchronized it, sold it when it was high. The market dropped when Kennedy was murdered, and then they could buy back, but they got at top price and could buy it back. It involved, according to this book, the American Bunge Corporation, financially controlled by a group of shareholders with headquarters in Argentina, known as Bunge and Born Limited. And it has to do with the large holdings of this group that had emigrated from Europe to Argentina and synchronized with what they said was a German influence in the home base of Argentina, flexibility in communications, tremendous assets, a strong influence and connection with the Allied and Tino De Angelis. It was the most incredible way of acquiring $500 million ever conceived by the minds of men. This was written at the time of the Kennedy assassination, and it seems that foreknowledge of these events can make a person very rich, and some people can lose their money, but the problem of knowing in advance and taking advantage of it is being investigated now. The San Francisco Examiner has an article, the Security Exchange Commission is investigating insider information in the Santa Fe options trading. Incensed officials of the Pacific Stock Exchange suspect that insiders, possibly foreigners, made millions of dollars in trading options on the Santa Fe International course. Some people were victimized by the inside trading, and some made off very well. And the brokerage firms want to know the names of the ultimate customers and what happened. The names so far are secret, who sold and who gained. But it would be interesting to know who made 22,700% in 1 week on his investment. That's what they're going into. And there's several articles this week of probing that. And with Gerald Ford on the Warren Commission hiding the Argentine connections to the Kennedy assassination, the Nazi Bormann connections down in Argentina, and now working with Kuwait and Santa Fe, he was one of the men who encouraged the sale, who had foreknowledge and encouraged it. And he also is one of the men who would have known that Sadat was going to be murdered and that we would escalate our involvement in the Middle East very rapidly. There are stories now about Reverend Moon, and they are trying to catch him on some tax matters, and he's appealing the case. The CIA is holding up the information. They won't release the information that's requested in an unprecedented court order report. They don't want to turn over sensitive information on the Unification Church. The Unification Church was started by the Central Intelligence Agency. He was an ammunition maker in Japan. He was a minister like Jim Jones was a minister. He's been getting tax credits all the while. But the links of Reverend Moon to the CIA are being held up, and they took this case to the Supreme Court, and of course Justice Warren Burger is siding to lock up the information on Reverend Moon. Warren Burger was put in by Richard Nixon, and Moon was brought to this country to begin to support Richard Nixon and to cover up the Watergate scandal by having huge advertisements and rallies in favor of Richard Nixon. In 1976, there was an article in the Nevada State Journal. A congressional subcommittee plans to ask federal agents to investigate reports that Reverend Moon secretly gained control of the Diplomat National Bank in Washington, D.C. Jack Anderson is one of the bank founders and current director of the bank with Reverend Moon. They asked to see if the funds came to the United States illegally at the time and if stock in the bank is secretly held by Moon or on his behalf. There's an alleged association of Moon secretly brought in millions of dollars through the diplomatic channels and failed to declare those millions of dollars he brought to this country and has a controlling interest in that bank in Washington, D.C. And, of course, you know how that's covered up. That's one of the problems with Jack Anderson. He pushes some stories, but he doesn't push the stories where he's a director or a business partner with Madame Chenault in a restaurant in Washington, D.C., or Madame Chenault's links to other people in the CIA and the intelligence community. Jack Anderson does a wonderful job with what he wants to tell, and then some of it he nicely covers up. So the Moon story is being concealed because the CIA can't reveal his links. You'd find out he was a CIA pastor from the time he decided he would be a pastor, just as Billy Graham is, and pushed in by people like the Hearst, the major media, and so forth. This church swindle has gone a long way from the hometown church, and it's become a big operation, and many of them are controlled by the intelligence community, and one of them is the Moon operation. And speaking of the intelligence committee and getting to a subject I talked about last week for 1 minute, I got an article from Texas about how Reagan was reviving his intelligence board. This was from the Dallas Morning News last week, and it talked about the Texans, five Texans members of the board. Ross Perot from Dallas, Texas, John Conley, Leon Jaworski, Edward Bennett Williams, and Claire Booth Luce. And I talked about these people and their relationship to Watergate, to the Kennedy assassination, to the CIA, and the watchdog of the intelligence community were all involved directly or indirectly with the cover-up of these assassinations through the years. But the article from the Dallas Morning News didn't mention the marvelous inclusion on this intelligence committee of Leo Chern. That's one of my favorite people. I don't know how they left his name off of this list. Mr. Leo Chern is going to be on the advisory board and working with the oversight board. He's been appointed to work under Richard Allen and various people. Ronald Reagan has appointed Leo Chern to be on this committee. There was a lot of discussion, according to this one article in the New York Times, and disputes. But Mr. Chern is on this committee, and he will serve as one of the top officials of this committee. Now, Leo Chern is a character, if you do research, that goes way back, like Theodore Shackley with Wilson and Turple. He works with those people very closely. Leo Chern, according to an article in New York Times in 1976, at that time was appointed by Gerald Ford to his committee investigating possible abuses of the CIA. He heads a private humanitarian organization which has links to the International Rescue Committee. He belonged to that group and headed it since 1960. That's the group that met and arranged to bring Lee and Marina Oswald to this country for Navy intelligence and to meet them at the New York Harbor. He was working with that from the 60s on. He raises a lot of money for various far right-wing organizations and speaks for them. He's associated with the Citizens Committee for a Free Cuba, violently anti-Castro-Cuban connections. He's in the Council Against Communist Aggression, the Citizens Committee for Peace and Freedom in Vietnam. He received the Freedom House Award, CIA Foundation, from the J.J. Kaplan Fund, which has to do with labor movements, student movements, the kind of the Chicanos, the Black Panthers, the working class movements that were infiltrated when the SLA formed the CIA. This was his shtick. Leo Chern has been linked directly to the Kaplan Fund and the CIA and the disrupting terrorists. If we see the CIA sends money to terrorists overseas in Germany and in the Palestinian group in Uganda and Libya and Ireland, it also has them or tried them in the United States with various actions such as the Manson family and the SLA and other domestic groups that were linked to the intelligence community. Leo Chern was described in Peter Dale Scott's book as a chapter, The Death of Kennedy and the Vietnam War. In May 1963, just before John Kennedy was assassinated, he worked with a committee for a free Cuba. He worked with the Vietnam lobbyists and the International Rescue Committee at that time, just before Kennedy was assassinated. He worked with Clare Booth Luce and Edward Teller and CIA fronts. The North American Newspaper Alliance was part of his group, and that hired Priscilla Johnson, who was meeting with Oswald in the Soviet Union and Marina Oswald afterwards, and he was associated with the advisory board to the Cuban Freedom Committee and worked with the anti-Castro Cubans, the Bay of Pig agents, that were funded by Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shockley in Miami. He was closely associated with them in Miami with Carlos Prio Siqueiros and that gang. Herman Kahn, 1976, had a police convention. He spoke, and Ed Davis had the international police chief, and Kahn and Leo Chern were guests, and they were talking about America and think tanks, and of course, lambasting the Soviet Union and welfare and security and ecology and the environment and so forth. They were putting down all the things we need, and this was a police convention in 1976. Ed Davis, Herman Kahn, and Leo Chern. Chern was a member of the Hudson Institute. He was the founding director of the Hudson Institute, an analyst for RAND Corporation that was closely associated with the Nugent Hand Bank, also in Australia, the Northrop Aviation, a consultant to Boeing Aircraft. He works with Stanford Research Institute, that's part of the Stanford Technology out here in Palo Alto, the Center for International Studies at Princeton. Leo Chern was a member of the Hudson Institute of America, the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, a key person along with Herman Kahn at the Hudson Institute. He also, interestingly enough, was involved with a lot of operations that were linked later to the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and the SLA activity and the forming of the SLA. There was a story in 1975 by a reporter, Bob Dietrich, who got information about Leo Chern and mentioned in an article about William Colby and Leo Chern that he saw the names of Richard Welch, that's the CIA station chief in Athens, and another person, a Mr. Reese, a KGB informer for the FBI. And this was among Colby's and Chern's papers. Robert Scheer wrote this up. And a few months later, Richard Welch was dead. And also this Mr. He was dead in Greece, and Mr. Reese was dead, the KGB informer. He turned informer, and Norman Reese in Connecticut. Now, these names were seen before the men were dead. And as I mentioned last week, the reason for having these tight laws about prosecuting people who name CIA agents was because Richard Welch had been killed. And I mentioned last week that this was set up by the CIA, and these laws could be put to suppress journalists who had information about the CIA. Well, a gentleman named Mike Casey got information from Leo Chern's Little Green Book, and this is a marvelous story that was lost in Europe. There were large articles about this that I had on this program, several years ago. One was from the New York Times in 1976, September 16th, and the other was the Washington Post, September 16th, 1976. Intelligence Advisor and the Little Green Book Affair. Leo Chern went to Europe, and he was working for the CIA, and he had a little green book that got lost. And there are allegations that it was found in a whorehouse in Paris. And, of course, he denied that right away. Chern said the report was circulated that he was in a Paris whorehouse, and he came home on a TWA airplane with a member of Navy intelligence. And when they got here, they found out that their notebook was missing with the names of the top agents of the CIA. He was doing official work overseas, and a man named Michael James Casey called Leo Chern in New York and called Randolph Hearst 6 months later. The notebook was missing in March of 1975. In July 1975, a man not related, I don't believe, to William Casey of the CIA called Leo Chern and said, I have your book. The book was lost in Paris. It was found and delivered to Hong Kong with the names of agents. Now, Casey, the man who had the book, was a prisoner at Soledad when Donald DeFries was there working for the CIA. He worked with the Vietnam refugees and helped them when they came over this country, the way that Mark David Chapman did at Fort Chaffee for the CIA. He was at Soledad Prison. He worked in Hong Kong. He knew where Patty Hearst was. And among other things in the notebook, when it was returned, Mr. Casey said, and it was written up in the Los Angeles Times, was a memo, September 22nd. Casey sent a letter, a telegram to Judge Carter, Oliver J. Carter, of the Hearst case, and he knew about the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, and he said, we request that Patricia Hearst be given bail, and he had information about the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and was interfering with the case and telling the judge to let Patty Hearst off, and Judge Carter died in the middle of that case and was replaced by another judge who sentenced Patty Hearst. Well, this notebook of Leo Chern's had the list of 100 or more CIA agents, and the interesting thing is that he was directly linked to the Nugenhan Bank, which formed in Australia in 1969, and to Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel and Theodore Shackley, and again, these important characters. What he had in the book was information of air Vietnam and flights between Saigon and Hong Kong and trips with his work with Air America. In September 1975, according to the New York Times, after returning the original copy of the notebook to Mr. Chern, Mr. Casey showed Robert Dietrich, a reporter from the San Diego Evening Tribune, what were typewritten copies of the book's contents with purportedly secret documents allegedly obtained from the CIA's Air America office in Saigon. Air America's office in Saigon was run by Theodore Shackley, and then it continued with the men they had rest and recreation over at the Nugenhan Bank in Australia. They put their funds in there, their heroin money, their dope traffic. When Chern was in Europe, he lost a little green book, which was lost in Paris. It has to do with Henry Kissinger again and Gerald Ford. And the names in the articles going back to 1976 are interesting to me because now that I am studying that Nugenhan Bank in Australia or Stanford Technology or where Edwin Wilson was or Frank Turpel or Air America, the names that have come out in the last year and a half in the news in these other stories makes the past names meaningful. Where Chern was at the time and the death of Judge Carter was interesting, and I mentioned it before in the Patty Hearst case, but the fact that Casey worked with the Vietnamese refugees, the way Mark David Chapman was working with them, and the list of names of the agents that Chern had and the information that Casey has never fully come out. But with all of that scandal of losing his little green book, of being linked to Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel, Air America, Henry Kissinger, the CIA, the Patty Hearst case, with all of those scandals, and there's more on this character, I mean, he runs through a whole era, foreknowledge of the Welch murder and so forth. Even with all of that, this week the president put him on the Intelligence Advisory and Oversight Units Committee. Now, how can a guy like this character, and every single one of those characters has a biography like that, how in the heck can they be on an oversight committee advising on intelligence operations when they have been involved in every scandal that still surfaces like pussy sores, never investigated? Imagine putting Leon Jaworski, John Connolly, Edward Bennett Williams, Leo Chern, and Ross Perot on a advisory board. Ross Perot in Texas had an escape. He helped some businessmen escape from Iran at the time of the fall of the Shah that represented investments of people from our Defense Department and from Texas. And Mr. Beckwith, who staged the hostage rescue that didn't take off when 8 people died, he's retired now, and he's going to work for Ross Perot in Texas. And Mitchell Werbel, who makes the silencers and the weapons for the assassination teams, sold his interest to an outfit in Texas that works with Samuel Cummings and Wilson and Turpel and Corcola. So in Texas, we're really having a paramilitary operation of weapons training, Perot, back with Mitchell Werbel outfit, and they're making their own rockets down there, too. There's quite a combine there with enough weapons for their own paramilitary operations. And Leo Chern is one name that was left out of the Dallas Morning newspaper that is really, it's so pathetic, it's comical, if you know who they are, to see these old dogs brought out to be put on that board again. The many articles this week you've seen about Idi Amin and his safe refuge in Saudi Arabia. It was Vice President Bush that lambasted Gaddafi for harboring this terrible person. And as I mentioned once before, I think last week, and praising our great ally, the moderate Saudi Arabia, when it turned out that Idi Amin, who's responsible for killing 300,000 minimum and torture and having the prime minister's head at the dinner table served and then banging it with some more shots, Idi Amin is over in Saudi Arabia, and there are many articles about that. Jack Anderson had an article this week on selling the AWACS and how Ronald Reagan lied to the country. And when the question came up of where is Idi Amin, they sent Buckley, our Deputy Secretary of Defense, James Buckley, the Undersecretary of State, rather, to Congress, to Capitol Hill, to disarm the senators, and he said he didn't know where Amin was. Well, Buckley and his brother are very much linked to the Chilean coup, to the Australian Guggenheim Bank, to the JM Wave, Kennedy assassination, the Watergate affair. They have been the highest level of intelligence operators. The two Buckleys, James Buckley and his brother William Buckley, are similar to Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles. So that Buckley, who is directly involved with these characters, goes to Congress on Capitol Hill and says, I don't know where Amin is. And while he says that, the Associated Press is having interviews with Idi Amin, and he's a man who's praised Adolf Hitler, who has Hitler's pictures, who is funded by the Central Intelligence Agency with weapons, with basketball teams that taught torture. We talk about Khomeini killing 1,000 or 2,000 people with a revolution over there, and yet we're supplying our ally, Saudi Arabia, and they are entertaining their guest over there, who admittedly a minimum of 300,000 people he had murdered, besides those he left to be starved. And in Saudi Arabia, the Guggenheim Bank has an agent, Bernie Houghton, former CIA man. He was directly linked to the Green Berets, Air America, Leo Chern. He's over in Saudi Arabia. He's the representative. And it's from those agencies that they can give money over there to supply Idi Amin and keep the Saudi Arabians treating Idi Amin great. The CIA from Australia and from Washington and from various countries supplies Saudi Arabia through their agent Bernie Houghton of the Guggenheim Bank and Green Berets and the assassination teams with a safe haven for Idi Amin. There were editorials this week of various people saying, why doesn't Andrew Young speak up? Where is Jesse Jackson? Where is UN Secretary Kurt Waldheim? Where are these people? Why don't they deplore the fact that Idi Amin is there? Why? For the same reason that they allowed the torture and the cutting up of Americans in Japan a while back, or in Nazi Germany, and many of them knew what was going on, or down in Paraguay today with the Indians, or down in Chile at Colonial Dignidad. There seems to be a void, a moral void of people. The ones doing it have no brakes, no stopping, and the ones who read about it can't comprehend it. And in between, there's some people that don't know. The people that don't know, there's no guarantee would respond if they hear this. The people who hear this information can't move right or left. It's a situation today where people are actually numbed by the news or numbed by so much information. I can't analyze where the indifference comes in. I can't believe how numb people are, but it is a fact, and they seem to be taking all of this, and I'm getting my information from the same papers you're reading, and yet there seems to be a general indifference, and life just seems to have lost its meaning for most people. They're either drugged or drinking or entertaining themselves, and simply have pulled away and figure, let the tortures come down or the bombs come and we'll handle it when it comes. I don't think anybody can estimate the amount of pain that's going to come or the price to pay for the indifference, but there's no way to get it into people's heads what's coming down. It's a tragic situation, but I guess it's one that's always happened and it'll go on for a long time. In the meantime, we'll read the newspaper and try to get educated and see what we can do. All we can do is try to understand it and then try to do something about it. I don't have any answers. I just bring up the problems and hope that all of us collectively someday will get mad enough to do something, either individually or together. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. I'll be back with you next week, and you take care.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.